working out of?
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go. It's a Brock and Salk podcast. It's another Wednesday. What's up, buddy? How we doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. You're always a little giddy on Wednesday. You're coming off your
you
high.
Say that.
You're coming off your euphoria.
You get
to hear great stories.
Well, hold on.
What?
I'm trying to make up for what I'm expecting from you based on our text threads during games and the rest of the time when old Negative Nelly comes out and
what?
I have to, like, remove
what?
Myself. I had to, for the first time, we've got our thread with me and you and Howdy and Kyle. I had to mute it. During a game, like, dude, I have to mute the alerts on this thread. One of us still has a show to do the next day, and I'm trying to get everything done, and all I get is Brock just like, this guy's terrible. This is awful. This is disgusting. I can't believe they'd even run that. This guy can't play. That guy can't play. This is a bad mistake. Like, dude, I'm watching the game. Leave me alone. And by the way, Grasshopper, things tend to get better in the second half.
I simply texted, that was the dumbest play I've seen in a long time. Cody Barton falling into the end zone from the 2 yard line.
And
6 feet.
It wasn't
He's
even,
6 feet.
Wasn't even close to the dumbest play in that
no,
game.
No, that happened 59 minutes later.
What
or whatever.
DK did was so much dumber.
True. True.
Wasn't even close to the dumbest play in that game.
Oh, gosh. No, you convicted me, so then I stopped. You didn't even have to mute it, because you convicted me, and I stopped texting and kept all those thoughts to myself. And then in the second half, they kind of
did what they do.
They responded.
It's like you've never watched a Seahawks game before. Every week, you're just like brand new to the Seahawks again.
Yep.
How do you manage to... You're like Lucy in the football. How do you keep falling for that?
That's called CTE, Mike. You want to make fun of it? Go ahead.
I might. Yeah. I think I might make fun of it. That's what I'm about, is making fun of people who are diseased.
Oh, goodness.
Well, it was ugly in the first half. I mean, obviously, as I wrote back to you, I'm not disagreeing with you. Like, obviously, they looked like... I mean, that first half was as bad as they've looked offensively in forever, which makes sense. They were playing with a guy who's not a starting quarterback in the NFL. Right?
In a pretty tough environment with a healthy team, and there was Watt, and they had Bush, and they had their team back. And, you know, when those guys are all healthy and firing in their stadium and in a game that they still had to have, right? They're 2-3, so they're playing with some level of desperation, mm-hmm. and those guys played pretty darn good defensively.
You got Casey Hayward and his one arm. Chris Collins were very obsessed with the one arm of Casey Hayward.
I thought it was the fugitive again all over with Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
A guy with one arm.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, he was a monster, and their whole group was just, and quite honestly, I think I was also reacting to Pete's body language and his face. Mm. It was a face you really hadn't seen since, honestly, the first couple years of their program, when they were 7-9, and when they went to Pittsburgh, their first year or second year, and just got throttled with T-Jack, and honestly, that was the look on his face. You could tell, right? We always joke about Scott Service being dad face, and he's just kind of the dad. Well, Pete's a grandpa. And Grandpa was upset. Grandpa was not, he was not in any way feeling what they were doing. Batted ball after batted ball after batted ball. Sack. Dwayne Brown wasn't feeling what they were doing. And I think I said to you on Monday on your show that, you know, Collinsworth, man, I'd like to have been in there. See who tore the paint off the walls or whatever. I'm sure it was Dwayne that was the most vocal and the most emotional. I'm sure Pete got after him and got after his crew and got after his coaching staff and got after your BBNN graduate mm-hmm. and say, hey, enough, man, enough. Like, we're not going to go out here and get our doors blown off and lose 31-3 and try throwing the ball. If we're going to go down, let's just try to play at least physical. Let's protect our defense a little bit by possessing the ball and running the ball. And that's exactly what they did to get back in the game.
Well, and unsurprisingly, of course, I'm talking to him the next morning, right, at like 5 a.m., Pete in his leather jacket, looking all good.
Do you think he slept on the plane?
I doubt it.
I bet he slept
maybe
an hour,
a little bit, but I'm sure he starts watching film. And then
he's in 1A, by the way.
He does have a little extra time because it's not until Monday night that they're playing. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I asked him what the heck happened at halftime, and you're right. He used the phrase. Pete's exact words was, "I was so freaking pissed." Yep. Those are his words coming out the next day, and so it obviously he at that point says, "No more, no mas. I'm not going to sit and watch this. Mm-hmm. I can't watch this." So what did he do? He went back to being Pete Carroll, right?
Yep. went back to I think challenging those guys up front, right? Challenging some of their fortitude and some of their manhood, frankly, to be able to move the line of scrimmage. And Alex Collins did an excellent job. I mean, he was part of that. It wasn't as if there was just gaping hole after gaping hole after gaping hole.
No, but there were big enough holes.
There were big enough holes.
And they ran Alex Collins plays instead of running read option every time. They let him run downhill. They threw him a toss sweep. Like, they did things he's good at.
Yep.
Imagine that.
Yep. And then they all kind of followed suit, and Homer came in there, gave him a little spark. DJ Dallas did his little thing, and then, you know, simple little play action, bootlegs off of it, little touchdown pass and play action, and all of a sudden you could function. I mean, he finally could function. Now, some of that's also a byproduct of the NFL and what happens and when you have leads. And we've watched that with the Seahawks. We watched it against the Titans this year, where they kind of kicked a game and had a big lead and you know, let the Titans come back in, let the Titans run it, gave up big plays, and all of a sudden, you know, the game was hanging in the balance and you lose that one. So some of it is by nature also, Mike, the NFL, that they tend to become one possession games more often than not.
But that's an interesting idea, because generally we think about the NFL and the comebacks that we see, right? Prevent defense. And so you take what's given to you underneath the prevent and you can quickly move up the field, right? Mm-hmm. Are you saying, and I guess it would make sense, that the same can be true with running the ball at that time? That because of the prevent or whatever it is they're playing, there's still more with it because they're taking a safety out of the box or whatever, and you can run the ball.
Yes, and they're not blitzing and coming screaming at you downhill and teeing off on you, and you know, yeah, they're trying to just kind of limit the big play and those deep in the linebackers especially. I mean, we watched again in that Titans game, the second level, the Seahawks defense gets so soft and drop into coverage, and oh, there's a 6-yard run. Oh, there's a 7-yard run. Oh, they break a tackle. There's a 50-yard run. Right? I mean, and I thought the Seahawks just got back into it. And, you know, that's not to diminish in any way the approach. And the approach was physical. And the approach was, we're going to hammer them. And if I'm going to go down and we're going to play without Russell Wilson, we're not going to go down putting the ball in the hands of Geno, trying to distribute and get the ball out. And he doesn't have a quick release. I mean, I think that's one thing that I learned about him that kind of jumped out to me, like all those little quick bubbles and quick screens. You take for granted how quickly that ball comes out of Russell's hand, like the second baseman that he is. And Geno just does not. It's an extra beat, and then the hand gets up, and that's tipped, and that's tipped, and that's tipped, and man, it was.
Is that a decision making processing speed, or is it a physical from moment I've decided to moment the ball's out?
It's Jack Wilson's hands when we watch Jack Wilson. Actually, EJ Manuel, a couple weeks ago, we were chatting about a young quarterback, the kid out at Oklahoma, Caleb Williams, who's come on the scene phenomenal.
The current Oklahoma starter, or the guy who was supposed to be good?
The current Oklahoma starter, Caleb.
Not the one who just got like
Spencer Rattler got benched.
Yeah, that guy.
And I had never heard EJ
work anymore.
EJ, and correct me if I've already told you this. I apologize. I've told this story a few times, so if I've told it to you, just say, "Bro, CTE." But EJ said hand talent. I was like, "Whoa, what hand talent? What is hand talent? I've never heard anybody say hand talent. You know, it's always arm talent, arm strength, all that." He's like, "No, look at his hand talent." And that's the one thing that Jimbo Fisher, and then it kind of like, oh, that's right. Luke told me about that. That Jimbo, when he recruits quarterbacks and he studies receivers, he looks at hand-eye coordination, hand strength, hand function more than any coach that Luke had ever worked for. He never even heard that term. But Jimbo wants guys that play baseball and basketball and football, and he wants to see their hand-eye and wants to see their hands. And you know, when you look at, and I think of Pedro Martinez, right, and Felix, and those guys, you know, to the extreme with the dexterity of their fingers, the strength of their fingers. Pedro had those goblin fingers.
So long.
Oh, so long.
Creepy.
But unbelievable flexibility, unbelievable snap, unbelievable dexterity, and it led to his filthy stuff. And Mahomes and Russell being baseball guys, well, guess what, man? That ball is out, right? And they got to grab it, and they got to throw it, and they got to, you know, and for Russ in particular, just second baseman. So, no, I think a lot of it is his hand talent of just being able to catch it, get out of his hand in an absolute heartbeat, whereas Geno, it just, you know, takes him longer. And that makes a difference in all that quick game they like to do.
Yeah, I don't know. What did you think of Geno?
I thought he had a very clear mindset that I'm not going to be rattled.
I love the word clear. Pete keeps using the word clear, too. Apparently, it's contagious because you're also saying clear.
Sorry. But he just had this almost stoic, like even when Dwayne was yelling at him when he didn't step up in the pocket and Dwayne screaming at him, right? Just like, oh, and just breathing fire into him, and you didn't see him bark back at all.
Smart man.
Yeah. But
who would?
But any of the negative plays or any of those things, he just had a very distinct, poised, nothing is going to faze me. It was as if I went in with that approach. And at times I was like, come on, sense of urgency. You know, I'd like to see a little bit of it. But I think over the course of his career, probably in previous starts, and when he's a younger player, he just rode the waves of emotion way too much. So he said to himself, and you heard Collinsworth say this and Tirico say it, so you know it came out in the production meeting, like, I'm looking at this as a resurrection. I'm looking at this as I'm no longer a young pup, man. And, you know, if I'm ever going to extend my career, then I got to make the most of this moment. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to have a poise and a much different mind frame than he had when he was a younger player.
Do you think there were NFL teams that watched and said, maybe I should consider Geno next year?
I don't think so.
I don't either.
He had a couple throws that showed you that, you know, he's not a total slappy, right?
No, I mean, he's a backup quarterback.
He's a backup quarterback.
I don't know whether he's a good backup or a bad backup, but he's a legitimate second string quarterback.
We'll know more Monday night. We'll know more the following Sunday against Jacksonville. He's going to have those two opportunities after that. We'll see where Russell's at in his recovery. After that, we'll see where Cam Newton might be a possibility, as Pete alluded to.
So he's talking my language. Well, I like it. Yes.
He's got two more. And what does John Clayton always say to you, Mike? Let's put it this way. A recurring thought when it comes to backups is they'll get you like 17 or 20 points a game.
Right.
Can you get more than that? Can he make more big plays? Can he push the ball down the field when he scrambles?
But he can't do those.
Can he hit Tyler Lockett and not one hop him?
He can't do that.
I think he can do that.
Not with any regularity.
Not with the consistency of an elite quarterback. But he is capable of making that throw to Tyler. He's capable of pushing it down the field.
I don't know that's true, man. I got to tell you, watching him in the preseason the last few years, watching him in practice, I don't see that. I know other people seem to. I don't know that I've seen that, and I hesitate because by all accounts, Geno's this great dude and everybody is rallying around him. But I saw a guy who in two straight weeks has turned the ball over to end the game. Yeah. Maybe the first one wasn't entirely his fault, but at the end of the day, that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And Pete was crushing the whole idea of his ball security at the end. It was interesting, again, talking to Hasselbeck, and he's like, yeah, the one thing Pete cares about, he didn't even know what Pete had said about Geno. He had just been like, yeah, well, Pete really cares about the ball. He cares even if you just hold it wrong. And he gets really mad because the whole philosophy is it's all about the ball. Well, what did Pete say to me? Well, you know, that ball got away from him, and he knows, and we don't allow that in this program. And he was holding it like a bread, you know, a loaf of bread.
Yep.
I almost said a bread basket. You generally don't hold bread basket.
No, you hit someone in the bread basket.
Is it smaller than a bread basket?
Jamal Adams took an interception right to the bread basket. Then someone else held the ball like a loaf of bread.
Right, which he couldn't have put into the said bread basket.
Correct.
Right. Gracious, Jamal. Well, anyway.
And that was the second missed interception from Jamal. The first one that was kind of more of a parachute.
I don't think I could call it a missed interception. I mean, it hit him in the face. He didn't miss it.
I think he quite literally missed it and never even knew the ball was there.
He was injured by it. I don't know whether I could say missed it means his hands were involved. It's not like he was stone-handed.
He was completely caught off guard.
He was not looking for it.
The first one, it looked like he thought like maybe it was a meteor that fell out of the sky and it was on fire. You're not supposed to catch it. Like,
no,
wait. It's like Brock's favorite firework when the army man goes parachuting in and he's like, there it is, run it down.
The second one, I think, is just sort of cruel. It clearly hurt. I don't know why you're expecting him to be looking for the ball. He's busy trying to play safety.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the ball.
The ball? He's breaking on a receiver.
Jeez.
And I got some peanut brittle.
The last of the peanut brittle. Yeah, that was not pretty. Back to Geno, though, for a moment. We'll get to Jamal and his various issues. I see a quarterback who's had two turnovers to end games, did diddly squat in the first half of that game. It was honestly the worst half of offense I think I can remember. And then finally, Pete coming on the next day to criticize the ball security and to go out of his way to say they were talking to Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. I asked him if they might talk to him in the future. He's like, Mike, we've talked to him. Okay, fine. Thank you. That doesn't sound like a ringing endorsement of Geno.
No. And Geno has not gained any equity or trust. He pointed to the preseason, and he's just been a very average to below average even preseason guy.
Well, I thought he had a pretty good preseason this year. He played two plays, didn't pick up a blitz, and got hit in the face, and that was the end of it.
That was it. So it's not as
who
if
who got
he's...
harder, Geno on that play or Jamal Adams by the football?
That's a good question.
Who should have been looking in that direction more, Geno or Jamal?
It's not as if he's gained a lot of equity and a lot of trust. Other than being a good teammate, he's been a good pro. He's been around. I think he's been a good encourager for Russell. I think he's, you know, been suitable in all of that. But this is where you gain the trust of your teammates. He did so on a 98-yard drive that blew all of us away. You used a term on the text I've never heard before. I'll probably never hear you say it again since. It wasn't that inappropriate. It was just something that I'd never heard before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
and I don't think we saw that or got a glimpse of that or a feel of that in Pittsburgh at all. But that was that was real. That was a 98-yard drive.
It was.
Back up against it.
I feel like he blacked out, woke up, and was like, man, I just got all the way down the field. Because we haven't seen anything like that since. No. I will give him some credit. I thought the drive at the end of regulation was pretty good also.
And that's right. Threw some check downs, good. Took what was there, made a good throw to DK. Yep. And
He made a couple of good plays on that drive. It wasn't perfect, but he made a couple of good plays. I, for the life of me, can't figure out what DK was thinking. I can't even
Mike,
fathom.
He's being a competitor, Mike.
I know, he's being a competitor. Yeah. Well,
what are you talking about?
How could
Mike?
You be so obtuse?
I guess I think that being a competitor is about trying to win the game.
I got a chance to get after him, though. He was losing the ball on the one that came out.
I just don't understand what's the goal there. I mean, isn't he right by the sideline and you're just trying to get out of bounds? Why is he fighting for extra yards?
Because he's a competitor, Mike. What do you want? That's what he's going to do.
I don't even know what to say. I love talking to Pete. And
Pete's 1 week away from calling you by your Michael Jeffrey.
He's had
he's going to be like, you don't get it, Michael Jeffrey.
That's not true. Pete and I generally get along.
You get along great, but he's very protective of his guys.
Yes.
Are you Jeffrey with a J or a G?
Come on. J, please. What do you think? Jeffrey with a G? I'm Jewish. Come on. I'm not British. What do you think, man? Come on. Let's have some respect.
Listen to MJ. He's a competitor.
Yeah. I hope Pete calls me MJ. That would be good. I don't know. I get it. Look, maybe he's just got to, you know, appraise publicly and teach privately, which is fine. Mm-hmm. The idea of defending what DK did there is makes no sense. It is a preposterous idea.
Oh, and Pete's already spent a year or two defending DK's ball security. Right. So he's like, this again? Like, oh my gosh.
He's just in for a penny and for a pound. That's fine. I'll take my medicine on that. But that was pretty ridiculous. That's all right. DK got it from Shannon Sharp, so he didn't need it from me. Shannon pretty well taught him the lesson he needed to be taught.
Yes, no doubt about it. And then, unfortunately, you make the kick, you get to overtime, and you get a chance to be the hero. And I will say this, as far as ball security, that was not in the pocket. I think I would be much more prone to rip him, and
but that's
gosh.
Not the biggest mistake he made. The game, they were already going to lose the game at that point, I think. They were backed up inside their 10. The problem was third down, near field goal range, right at the very edge of field goal range. What do you call that? It's not the high red zone, but it's like right above field goal range.
Yeah.
And he takes a brutal sack.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do that.
Nope.
You cannot do that.
Negative 18-yard sack.
I mean, you just can't. You can't do that. And I know that Russ has certainly done that himself, but you can't let that happen there. That's the play that I would focus on, not the fumble. That was the death knell. But the real problem was you had a chance to win the game.
Yep.
Or at least to kick the field goal and put yourself in a position to win the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bummer. So here's what I've learned, because this is kind of what I want to kind of look at now moving forward. Russell Wilson is number one in the NFL in what stat?
Wins.
No, this year.
Oh, well, give me context.
Sorry.
Michael.
This year. Sorry, Brock.
Michael Jeffrey.
Sorry. This year, Brock is number one in the NFL in what stat?
Brock is?
No, Russell is.
Well, you said Brock is.
My God, man.
You're a mess right now.
I've been up for so long. Would you cut me a break?
I'm
Jeez.
Sorry. I'm just trying to follow.
Brock, just goodness. Kill
Why do you have to be like this? Russell Wilson, this year, is number one in the NFL in what stat? And I know you've just been delaying in order to Google it to get it right.
I haven't. No, I haven't Googled anything. Touchdown interceptions?
No. Quarterback rating.
Is he really?
He's number one in the league in quarterback rating. Efficiency, essentially.
Yeah.
He is number three in the league in completion percentage.
Mm-hmm.
So Russell's doing Russell things. He's being efficient, as he always has been. He's being accurate, as he always has been, and their offense has not done very well.
Mm-hmm.
What should I take out of that?
You should take that and say, man, Brock was right this summer when he said this new system is not going to just be seamless. It's not going to be just some explosion. It wasn't that way with Aaron Rodgers in year number one with Matt LaFleur. It wasn't that way with Tom Brady, the greatest of all time, the first half of the season, plus with Bruce Arians and crew down in Tampa Bay. It's you just can't snap your fingers. And oh, by the way, they didn't even have an offseason. Russell and Bobby and Tyler, none of them practiced the entire offseason. So did you think that this was going to be some snap of your fingers and these guys are going to get rolling and everybody's going to be on the same page? And
yeah,
this
I,
awesome
did.
Is, well, I did not think so. I did not.
I kind of did. It worked last year for everybody.
Yeah, I did not.
There's a major problem, though, with this, because it's not like it looks like the Seahawks are trying to do something and failing. It looks like they're doing exactly what they've always been doing, and it's supposed to be a brand new system. It doesn't look new at all.
Yeah, other than the first game, quite honestly. First game, bunch of those gimmies, bunch of movement, bunch of jet sweep, bunch of screens,
and
right? First game.
Well, I'll tell you, yeah.
And really the first half of the first game against Indy, you're like, wow.
Oh, okay, good. I thought you were talking about 2020 at first.
No,
sorry,
this again. This looks different. This looks just to your eye, like, wow, this looks much more like Shanahan, much more like LaFleur, much more, you know, like McVay. This kind of looks like what I bargained for.
So where did that go?
And then
what? Why did it change?
Don't know.
But it did change.
I mean, to my eye, it did change. I think so. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
They had so much success, they thought, let's stop.
What happened the year before when they rolled out a brand new style of offense with
Shanahan? Well, it stopped working at some point.
Yes.
I mean, they were using it. They didn't decide to go away from it.
And then what did they go back to?
Exactly, but that wasn't until like week 10. That was not until late in the season.
That's true. That was after Buffalo and some picks or a couple games where you're a little loose.
They had every reason to go away from it. They couldn't execute it anymore.
Well, and the defense was pathetic. I mean, the defense was the worst in the history of the league. So we're not going to double down and be all aggressive on offense and throw a couple picks and make our defense even look worse.
And I understand why they...
Last year.
I understand last year, and I understand why after watching the first half, Pete was like, yeah, enough of that. I'm doing what I know. I'm doing what I'm good at. I'm not compromising anymore with anybody.
Yep.
But I don't understand what had been going on from game two until the midway point of game five. I don't understand what happened in there, and I'm not even going to pretend to.
We have some clues, because Pete Carroll said after the first win, when you asked him in the Pete Carroll show, what's so great about Shane Waldron?
He said,
his answer is, he does what I want him to do.
That was a little surprising.
That was his answer. The next week, they came out and reverted to the second half of last year's offense. It's
so
not that
record timing for a come-to-Jesus meeting.
So let me see if I understand.
Halftime, week five.
Let me see if I understand what you think, Howdy.
This is always good.
You think, if I can put words in your mouth, that the Seahawks ran the new Shane Waldron system in game one to success, but there was one play in there that Pete liked that was from the old system. And so after that, Pete got in Shane Waldron's ear, right? Are you with me so far?
Great, go ahead.
And said, no more of that. I want you to go to the bad offense, not the good one.
No, Mike, that's how you would have done it if you were Pete Carroll in that situation. Pete Carroll's all positive. Pete Carroll looked at that game in the first half
and said more of that.
Pulled 5 to 7 plays where he said, oh, yeah, this play that you and I worked together that I used to use, look how great this was. I love that you do this kind of stuff. Brian, you know, we tried to get through this. We just couldn't figure it out. But I love that you do this.
Is it also possible that...
you put that cookie out there on the shelf, and he said, okay, well, I'll go do some more of that. Like,
I don't think that.
I'll get some more into that. I
don't see that happening. I see them having tried to do some of the new stuff and didn't work. What was the very first offensive play from scrimmage in the game on Sunday night?
Screen pass?
Nope. It was a tight end jet sweep to Gerald Everett.
Yes.
Right.
Isn't that the new creative stuff you guys want? It is.
Sure.
Fly sweep with your 250-pound tight end?
That's the stuff that you guys want. That's the newfangled stuff. That's it. That's not a Pete Carroll staple.
You set that up for success.
Well, we don't have T. Eskridge, right, so we got Gerald Everett. We just have him do it.
That is, I mean, it worked for a touchdown for the Steelers. They ran the same play for a touchdown.
Not from the 25.
They have the full offense, not a backup quarterback that everyone's expecting to run.
That's barely true. Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, you can't touch him. You can't blitz him.
No.
But he can't throw down the field. So that's not true. They don't really have a full offense either. That's not fair.
They planned that offense to look that way.
Hmm. That's
did they hit Ben? Did Ben get hit?
No.
He got
hurried
one time.
There was one quarterback hit.
Rush.
And there is technically a sack, I learned today. Did you know they got a sack in that game?
No.
Yeah, do you know why?
No.
They definitely got a sack. Here's a little trivia question.
Oh, was it the sack fumble? Or was it the fumble?
The fumble was considered a sack.
Backfield.
Ben just even though no one touched him.
Even though nobody touched him. Because it was in the backfield. It's a team sack.
Interesting.
Yeah, there was some thought that maybe they got a sack for Ben's belly flop into the middle of the field in overtime, but that wasn't a sack.
No, you lose tight ends. You do lose Gerald Everett. You do lose D. Eskridge. You do lose Shell. You do lose Carson. I mean, you've lost some pieces this year. If you want to make some explanations and some excuses as to why this offense, you know, was not as explosive in stretches, you have, you know, you look good for a half an Indy, and then, you know, you kind of protect the lead. You look great for a half against Tennessee, and then you don't make a ton of adjustments in the second and kind of kick that game away. So, I mean, you had halves of some excellent explosive football, but nothing with great continuity.
Right.
And then you do lose D. Eskridge, and he's supposed to be your horizontal guy, right? He's your jet sweep. He's your lightning fast. He's your difference maker. You know, nothing against Swain or
Penny Hart.
Or Penny Hart or Tyler, but, you know, they're just a different gear with him. And
what about Jake's guy, Philip Dorsett? He was in there.
Yeah, he caught a smoke route.
We're spending this podcast decrying the Seahawks because of Hart.
I'm not at all.
No, Geno Atkins, Geno Smith. I mean, why are we talking
Malik Turner? What's going on?
The best coach in the football. They have one of the three best coaches in football.
No, I think what we're getting at here, if I'm going to sort through all of this, what I'm smelling a little bit, what I'm smelling is Howdy, and what he's cooking here is that Pete is just heavy-handed and is going to run the football and is going to do what he's going to want to do. And it was that way with Bevel. It was that way with Shoddy. It is now that way with Shane Waldron.
Well, but it vacillates in between. He always starts with letting them do their thing. We're going to let Russ cook. Yep. We're going to throw the ball. And then midway through, okay, we're going to get back to running.
He's like a driving instructor who's got parking brakes on both sides of the car. Like, he'll put it on whenever he wants to do it.
But if you watch the first half of Geno Smith, wouldn't you have thrown the e-brake also?
It doesn't matter now that Geno Smith is in. Who cares?
But he didn't do that until then. They haven't run the ball at all until then.
One half of their new offense, and the rest of it has not been that
way. I totally disagree with you.
No way.
I will argue, as usual, you are just spouting off. Yes, it was successful in game one. It was not successful in games 2, 3, and 4. It has nothing to do with Pete coming in and saying, don't run creative passing offenses.
Then why aren't they running creative passing offense in the first
I think they did. It didn't work.
No
way. It didn't work. It was not as successful. It did not work. And oh, by the way, their defense was playing once again at a historically awful pace.
Horrible.
So after watching Geno Smith bumble his way through it for 30 minutes, Pete was like, I can't take it anymore. I'm trying to let you do your thing. I'm trying to let Russ cook. I'm trying to let Waldron weave or whatever he's supposed to do. I can't do it anymore.
Everything
it's
in this
Waldron.
It's about a home ex class.
It is let Waldron walk.
Walk?
Okay? With a W-O-K.
Oh, jeez. Yes. Stop it. That is ridiculous. That's worse than weaving or wizarding or whatever else he's supposed to be doing.
Work.
That one probably makes
sense.
Oh, well, if you want to keep it simple, fine. You can go with work. I prefer weaving. It's a little more creative, and it's a little more like American pastoral.
You know what is a little bit disappointing, though? Like,
Pete said no more.
That first game, there were so many gimmies. There were so many easy completions. There were so many, right?
What are you talking about, Russ's? But Brock, he's obviously getting enough gimmies. He's third in the league in completion percentage and number one in efficiency. It's not like he's not getting the completions. He's completing over 70% of his passes.
So is it just not playing complimentary football?
It's not.
Is it just not the circle of trust and toughness?
No.
Special teams have let him down. Defense has played poor. You're not taking the ball away.
Those things have been true. But also, it didn't change until Geno came in. He didn't kill this until Geno came in. And then was like, yeah, I can do that. And we'll see what happens when it comes back. Pete sort of said two things. With me, he said these next few games and beyond. Then later on the press conference, he didn't say the beyond part. We'll see what happens. Obviously, there's going to be a tension, especially if they win the next two games by running the football and doing it that way. Then what? Yep. They could also just get slaughtered by New Orleans, and this whole thing is going to end up being kind of a moot point. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot still to come. Yeah. There's a lot still to come here in the next little while. So let's see what we got going on at Famous Dave's. All right. Uh-huh. Besides a passion for authentic barbecue. I know you like that. I saw Howdy making some barbecue the other day. A bit of a pit master himself.
Howdy's brisket looked unreal.
Yeah, did he bring any leftovers for you guys?
It did look good.
What leftovers?
The timing didn't work out.
What do you mean the timing didn't work out?
It was the day that we cooked it versus the days we're going to be in, and there's a weekend. And
We cooked it for Thursday Night Football. We weren't going to be back here for 6 days.
I mean, I definitely would have eaten it 6 days later. I'm like, I have a passion for authentic
barbecue.
Do you
have barbecue. Any still left, Howdy?
No, we just threw out the last 2 days.
Oh, we've only seen you four times since then. It's fine. Anyway, at Famous Dave's, they would share to create their classic Q goodness. They source high-quality meats. They trim them up like they're in competition. Pitmasters keep those hickory logs smoldering in the smokers all day long, something I know Howdy doesn't do, hand-rubbing the meats with a proprietary blend of spices, slow-cooking them to perfection. That's why they've won more than 700 awards. Famous Dave's an authority in the barbecue world. So, Famous Dave's barbecue for game day. Football, of course, back this year, so kick off the winning season with Famous Dave's barbecue. Now, menu highlights. All-American barbecue feast. A full slab. You know how many bones that is?
12.
12 bones. Mm-hmm. St. Louis-style spare ribs. My jam. Whole country roasted chicken. Half pound. You can go either Texas beef brisket.
Yep.
Or Georgia chopped pork.
Brisket.
Who's going pork?
Brock's probably going pork.
I might go pork.
You're going
brisket. I'm going brisket.
I'm not getting brisket. In between on that one. Creamy coleslaw, famous fries, Wilbur beans, sweet corn, cornbread muffins, the whole thing, only $79.99, serving family style 4 to 6 people. Appetizers, though. Brock, are you ready? I know this one's your thing.
I think I'm ready.
What do you want for an appetizer? Do you want burnt ends?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you do.
Does that even qualify as an appetizer, by the way?
If you want it to be. If you treat it that way.
It's kind of like cereal to me. You can have it for any part of the meal. You can have it for snacks.
It's a snack.
Everything.
Yeah, it's a snack.
Be the entree, be the dessert.
Yes.
Kind of a snackitizer, I think you would call it. Yeah, burnt ends, south side rib tips, wings, onions, strings. You get it, man. 1, 2, and 3 meat combo platters, the whole deal. Go to FamousDaves.com. Well, we did get news this week, Brock, and it probably wasn't that unexpected. Coming down on Monday, which of course was the date for public employees, state employees in Washington to be vaccinated. Nick Rolovich was not, and so his contract was terminated for cause by the university. That was, again, not a huge surprise. The next day, and I don't think this is necessarily a big surprise either, his lawyer announced that they are involved in a lawsuit now against Washington State. And so that's kind of where we are with that. It's hard. I think you and I...
How'd it go on the radio talking about this? Was it enjoyable?
Well, day one was actually fine, honestly. I mean, yes. The first day, we don't do a political show. It's not like I'm going to sit here and like talk vaccine mandates and how I feel about various, you know, statistics that come out from health organizations. Like, I leave that to the folks over at Cairo. That's what they do for a living. And I don't pretend to spend my life researching that. I'm busy trying to think of another way to talk about Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
That's my job.
This has certainly been a huge story, though, for months.
You
right?
can't
not,
miss it.
Not even in Cairo. I mean, all the local news. And I mean, just constantly. And I did a Wazoo game a few weeks ago, right? USC, when they had Scar, the QB that had the eye black that went from his eyebrow over his eyelid.
Jackson Dart.
Jackson Dart, who tore his MCL in that game, but still played incredibly, and unfortunately for the Cougs. So I was over there. I mean, I chatted with Nick about this. Pat Chun was there at practice when I was out there watching, and this was certainly a story every single week that Chris Daniels asked him, you know, repeatedly week after week after week after week, because it was just one of those stories that blends sports with news, with a topic that's been politicized and talked about for 18 months now.
Well, and he's the highest paid employee in the state, right?
Yep.
So whether what direction he goes was certainly a giant news story.
Mm-hmm.
How did it go, you ask? I think day one went really well. I mean, you're not going to be, most people won't listen. They'll just kind of get mad and go to where they already are, and that's fine. I tried to spend some time putting myself into different people's shoes and thinking, how would I feel if I were them? Because quite frankly, this doesn't affect me at all. I'm not much of a, it's not like I'm a Wazoo fan. Yep. It's not like I care
specific. We don't even hardly know Wazoo fans, do we? Oh.
Well, I do know some. I mean, but I hope Wazoo does well. I mean, like, I have a slight rooting interest in them doing well, but I don't care about Nick Rolovich one way or another, and his vaccination status is not all that interesting to me.
Nor his job status.
That's right. I don't care whether he's the head coach at Washington State or not. If it could be him, it could be somebody else. I don't really care that much.
Yep.
I tried to put myself in different people's shoes. How would I feel if I were a state employee? I think I'd be mad. Mm. I don't want to be mandated to do anything. So I understand a lot of frustration. And by the way, that's not necessarily the head football coach. That might be the bus driver or the whoever else works for the state.
Sure.
Yeah, I get it. I understand a lot of the frustration with being told to do something. I tried to put myself in the shoes of the kids at Washington State on that team. I think I'd be I think I'd feel betrayed. Don't you think? Of like, hey, I came here and this was what I was expecting and that's not what's happening. And I don't know whether I'd feel betrayed by him or betrayed by the state, but I would feel as if the thing that I was expecting was not going to happen. And that's a level of betrayal.
It's out of their hands completely.
That's right. You'd feel helpless. That's another good word for how you feel.
You'd just be mad.
Anger sort of came up in all of these, so I tried to come up with other words. Since everyone was just sort of angry.
Sorry, let Waldron weave. Okay, sorry. You're the wordsmith.
But Howdy's right. I think helplessness is a really great way of looking at that they didn't have anything to do with this. Correct. And by the way, they all got vaccinated. 99% of the team is vaccinated. So there may have been some people frustrated with him or with the state. And so I would understand that. I think if I were a parent, though, and this is where I started to, turn some people off, I'm sure, I'd be disappointed in him. And that really came through today. Not because of his decision to get vaccinated or not. I don't want to get into that. But because of his decision not to talk about it and then to sue over it. Mm. I find that to be disappointing, distasteful, and I really genuinely don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, I am genuinely not in the business of litigious folks either. That's hard for me. And some of that was my background in working in real estate and working some deals and working with who I worked with there for a number of years. And just their discomfort with partners that had ever been in litigious situations. Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of, I guess, some of my background. I didn't grow up, obviously, with any of that. Didn't grow up with any means. Didn't grow up understanding what any of that world even looked like. I've been around it a little bit through real estate and obviously in professional sports and agents and having attorneys and all that. But yeah, that is a tough turn to this story that has, as you said, about 10, 15, 20 kind of complicating angles to it from the players, from the administration, from the coaches. 'Cause Nick wasn't alone.
No, there
was three other coaches,
four assistants plus Rolovich is five from just the football team, which accounted for about 10% of the dismissals from WSU were from the football staff.
Yeah, I'm with you, Brock, on the litigious thing. I think that generally is something that I shy away from. And my situation is a little different from yours. I have been the plaintiff in a lawsuit when I was a kid. I mean, we've told the story before of how I hurt my hand when I was young and I was at camp. And, I think pretty clearly, if you know the whole story, it was absolutely a situation of negligence. It came at great cost to my family and to myself and my future. And there was absolutely a lawsuit. I can't talk about how it was settled, but there was a lawsuit.
Yep.
And I don't have any guilt over it whatsoever. And I feel at times like some of the people searching for lawsuits or trying to just go to the court system to solve every issue are, cheapening that. There are times where you absolutely need to sue for negligence or for whatever it is. Yep. I never thought it was burning your hand on some coffee because no one told you it was hot. Like there, you have to delineate the difference between the frivolous, the litigious, and the lawsuits that are there to protect people from being legitimately taken advantage of or being in a bad spot that was caused by somebody else. Mm. This to me is it goes to what Tom Tangney was saying on our show. Tom was really good talking about this. Unsurprisingly, he's a pretty smart guy.
Was it a Husky talking about a Coug? Was this his purple and gold bias?
It was. Well, he admitted some of that for sure. But he just said, look, he said he has a pretty big soft spot in his heart for people who want to demonstrate
civil disobedience
and a proud tradition of doing that. And on that day, he said, look, if this guy truly believes it and he's willing to pay the price here, which is getting fired, I have respect for that. I do, too. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. If he believes it so strongly that he's willing to sacrifice his job and the money and everything that came with it in order to make the point that he thinks is so valuable, I respect that. Whether mm-hmm. I agree with his point or not, what? I would absolutely have respect. But to come in the next day and start throwing around a lawsuit and discrimination and throwing Pat Chun under the bus and trying to get the money back, that cheapens any of the idea of civil disobedience because he's trying to not pay the price.
Ooh, that doesn't to me at all.
Really?
No, it changes it a little bit, but if he believes that there's something wrong and he was wronged, mm-hmm. another step of civil disobedience is to take action to right a wrong. And to address that, hey, this is a problem. It was done incorrectly. I need to do the full spectrum.
Then why hasn't he talked?
You guys
about
keep
it.
Talking though about what he believes,
right? Why does
we
he
have
say
no
that?
Clue what he believes? Mm-hmm. He won't say at all what his beliefs are, or why he's doing this, or what his thoughts are.
But what we
there's
don't
no
know.
Explanation. But,
and to follow up on Kyle's point, my assumption, based on the speed of the lawsuit and the lack of talking about his ideas leading up to it, is that he didn't say them because he wanted to just have a lawsuit.
You have to go with that assumption by saying that he never had these conversations with decision makers in the background. That there was no conversations ahead of time with the people who were making these decisions at the university or with the local governments.
Well, I don't think so. The idea of civil disobedience would involve some level of leading the public, or in his case, the team. And I don't know that he did a good job of that.
There's a narrow aspect to that in my mind, because you have the whole, whatever's being done behind the scenes is all a part of it. It all gets included in this. There's a public facing, and then there's a procedure of how you go right about it. You can say that he fell short in the procedure of how you lead as a leader of a football team and putting it out there, but that doesn't mean he's not going through the process of going through and trying to make change through this whole
situation. Well, that is true. I would grant you that. I don't... The idea of being willing to take the big risk for what you believe in, and again, I would agree, Kyle, we don't know exactly what he believes in.
And when someone leaked what he believes in, he was irate about it.
That's right.
His mentor said he was a religious exemption, and he was like, I've been betrayed.
Well, and then it seems like the lawsuit is claiming that there's a Catholicism element, but I, from what I've read, and I'm not an expert certainly in Catholicism nor how this is working, but I did see that the Pope is encouraging people to get vaccinated. No. So I don't. That seems like a tough road to go down. Not that he doesn't want to follow a different Catholic doctrine or whatever, but to claim that he's being discriminated against as a Catholic, that's a little bit different than my beliefs say such and such.
Yeah, I just got a note this morning from one of my friends who said, actually, in looking at the religious exemptions, the state of Oregon actually is granted many, many more religious exemptions mm-hmm. in the state of Washington. So how does a state even go about granting and making the, right?
And that's way out of our league.
Well, exactly. Real far down the road. And the difference between an exemption and an accommodation, because right. they can grant the exemption, but say we can't, you don't work at the post office and we're going to move you to the back.
This thing gets exhausting in a hurry and gets way out beyond what we usually talk about. But I think the idea of what kind of a leader is Nick Rolovich does become an interesting question that is on our list, right?
Yep.
And
it will be kind of fascinating to see. Will other programs love this? Well, I don't think he's going to land a Power 5 job anytime soon, right? He didn't have necessarily
Baylor.
Losing record.
This guy is going to be the coach at Baylor within 5 years. Guaranteed right now. Before it's said and done, Nick Rolovich will coach at Baylor in some capacity.
Well, Baylor's coach could be heading to LSU, so you may be getting
your just, I will, you put it on the board right now. He will eventually, I don't know if it'll be the head coach, he will eventually be the coach at Baylor.
I just, you know, again, speaking to emotions, I was just kind of bummed for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, to me, people cheering this, and there were plenty of people cheering this and good. I can't stand him. He's a terrible human being. He's awful. He's a terrible leader. I had a hard time.
I didn't hear a lot of that. I'm not saying it didn't exist. I didn't hear a lot of that.
I did. Okay. We briefly talked about this on a serious show, and certainly got a bunch of that. Even from former military people, that was just like, good, glad, terrible leader, terrible person, wouldn't do it for anybody else. Heard from, a number of folks tweeted me, like, I can't stand this guy. He has no right to coach. What what a shame. I even had a discussion with a family member of mine about it, you know, and like, sheesh, wow. Okay, that's one element, you know, element of it. The other side of it's like, man, this is just bad. He got totally hosed. This is terrible. What a bad deal for him. Okay, whatever. Like he knows what he's stepping into. He knows where he's coaching and, you know, the state in which he lives. So that, I mean, he knew those things. We took this job. So I can't really land there. So I kind of just land, not to sit in the middle of a fence, but I just kind of land with some sadness that this was the topic for their program, for those players, that to put those players in talking to folks that, you know, around some of those players, they felt gutted, right? To your point, Mike, try to wear those shoes. Jaden Delora grew up in a run and shoot system in Hawaii, mm-hmm. coached by June Jones, you know, mentored by June Jones as a player and at St. Louis High School and, you know, knew Nick Rolovich a long time and to you know, read his comments and to know, and I think I said this to you on Monday, and I've had a little taste of this, you know, with Haley at Montana now. She wasn't there last year, but in talking to the parents of the players on the team from last year and the amount of separation, the amount of testing, the amount of all that they went through and the starts and the stops and the quarantine, I mean, just all of it that those players did last year there too.
Brutal.
Missing multiple games. Am I practicing? Am I not playing? I'm practicing year round. I'm testing every day. And then have this kind of thrown onto him. I do, man. I feel a sadness for it. I think Tobeck tweeted that Monday. Like, hey, man, I know there's emotion on every side of this, but let's think about these student athletes and these players that are representing our school.
Which is really the only reason we're paying attention to it in the sports community.
Yeah.
You know, we can cut this out, Brock, if you don't want to talk about this, but it dawns on me that in some ways you were in a similar position to him. That you did not want to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. Your employer told you to continue your employment. You needed to, and you decided to get vaccinated. You could have gone down the same road.
Well, one of my peers did. Allison Williams did. Right? Allison Williams. Now, it's a little different. Fox never mandated for us. ESPN has mandated for all of their employees to do that.
But Fox said if you want to be in the press boxes.
Fox said, you know, the challenge with this is going to be the stadiums. It's out of our hands. So Fox did not mandate and has not mandated for anybody. But they said, hey, if you're, you know, just to...
But you could have fought the law if you had wanted to. You could have either taken the, you know, lost your job if that's the way it had gone down, or you could have gone the Nick Rolovich route and decided to sue and this and that. And I respect your beliefs in this, but you decided in that moment, you know what? I'm assuming it's not worth the headache. I'm just going to go get this shot, move on with my life, and continue to work.
Yes.
How did you reach that decision versus the one he did?
Yeah, I think there were a few things at play. For me, you know, just from our livelihood standpoint, I have to provide, you know, like that's our home and our private school and the kids and, you know, just our living. Like I'm the provider in our home. So that made it, you know, very difficult. Nick Rolovich had some freedom to do this.
Some financial freedom, essentially.
Yeah, I think some financial freedom and some financial choice that others didn't. You know, the challenge for me was I had COVID and that's where, you know, I honestly, man, of anybody that has spoken on this, mm-hmm. and it is a charged conversation, right? For our listeners right now, who are maybe charged a little bit, listen on both sides or whatever, like, man, I can't believe you're not that
charged, knowing that Brock and I aren't that charged with each other. And clearly we have some very differing views on this. I mean, I hope that you guys can listen to this and be okay with it, given that we're okay with each other. So hopefully that helps. I doubt it helps. But I'm sure it doesn't, but maybe it does.
But I thought the player for the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
I just, you know, is it Jonathan Isaac? Do I have that name?
I don't
right?
remember his name.
And, you know, he spoke for about two and a half minutes, and his case was exactly, you know, similar to mine. And this is where Nick Rolovich, maybe he got counsel, Mike, 6 months ago that said, this is where it is going and you cannot speak on this. Mm-hmm. You know, like to your point about some of the lawsuits and litigation, like you just cannot open, you just can't say anything, you know? And I'm sure, right, that as he started to see this ball rolling and where it was going and the way that, you know, some of these states were going to handle this differently than other states, he and his counsel said, okay, we're not going to say boo. But I thought the NBA player said it best. And he just basically said, I've had it. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I've told you that. I think I've made that public. I had it last November. I missed 2 weeks. You know, thankfully, I had a couple days where I was pretty fatigued and sore and tired. But, you know, and then everyone in our home had it. We've had antibody testing. I've done that multiple times. You know, thankfully, we have strong, durable antibodies. And I wished, you know, like, and I waited as long as I could. And frankly, I didn't do the Seahawks games because I wouldn't get the vaccine in June when the NFL said, hey, anybody around the team, anybody in the NFL? And I made that choice at that moment. Like, I just can't do that right now. And I want to see in time if antibody testing, like in Europe and some of these places, would come to our state and come to our country. And that has not happened yet.
And also worth noting that between the time, if I'm not mistaken, if I have the timeline right, between the time the Seahawks thing happened and the time that the Fox stuff happened, the FDA approved it fully rather than conditionally, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
I don't know if that meant anything to you, but that did happen. It went from the conditional speed of, now we're getting into all the details of the new stuff. But I do think it's, you know, I think the where I was going with some of that, and I appreciate you talking about it and being open, is that it feels a little bit, and you could write a story anyway, that Rolovich is making this, he's making his stand and making it about him, rather than saying, look, it's not what I want to do. But what I really love to do is coach these kids. And right now, that's a condition of coaching these kids. And I don't like it. I wish that I didn't have to do this. But unfortunately, I love coaching the kids and I respect them. It feels instead to me like he's deciding to make it about Nick Rolovich's stand and Nick Rolovich's role in this whole thing rather than about the job that he was hired to do.
I could see and respect that. I'll say that there's a part of me that believes that he thinks that he's in a unique position on this issue, being in the leverage role that he is, and that there are very few people who will be willing to make the stand that he thinks is important that have as much sway or impact as he does.
Yeah.
So,
if that's the case,
moment,
though, doesn't he have a burden to explain what that stance is?
To Brock's earlier point, I think that there's probably a good chance that he wants to make sure that he doesn't miss this opportunity, that something he said along the way will foil the case and stop this from coming through and impacting the change that he wants. So
I mean,
if I'm going to be generous,
but
that's how
vetted
I would
that.
Say.
I mean, if you've got something to say, you vet it through your lawyers first. I mean,
and his counsel may have said, you just can't say anything.
Yeah, and then it becomes about him.
You don't get credit for taking a stance that you won't share.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think in time, he's going to have to share it, is he not?
Yes. I would think so. And then he will have missed all
discovery and litigation.
That's right.
So in time, he's going to have to share it.
All right. Well, good stuff. Yeah. Thanks for the conversation. I don't know if that helps anybody out there, if you enjoyed it, if you're just mad at one or both of us right now. But I will tell you that Brock and I still like each other. Me and Howdy, less so. No, I'm just kidding. Well, all four of us do. We text about this stuff, and we've got thread, and this is something that, you know, for the most part.
And there's times it gets emotional.
It does occasionally.
There's times it gets a little too far, and there's times, and that's okay. That's what good friends are supposed to do.
That's
You're
right.
supposed to be able to have the difficult, right? You said that way back when. We should be able to have difficult, demanding, hard conversations, and you know what? And have some debate about it. And it is unfortunate that that in this case, the ones I think most hurt are those 85 to 105 guys that right now are playing good ball, too. Are they playing good ball? And they're a pretty good team. And if Jaden Delora not got hurt against USC and they give up a touchdown before half, they're probably 4-1 in conference.
Well, it also would have helped if Rolovich didn't decide to randomly bring in his third and fourth string quarterbacks at random. Like, maybe this guy. Hey, we're at the goal
line. Victor Gabalas.
Maybe this dude. And I don't know whether that factors
into
our
Now we're running the wishbone. Watch this.
There are some, like, coaching decisions that are a little questionable in there also. Yeah. But good stuff. Good conversation. Thank you.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, let's wrap things up after a very intense conversation today. We'll Blue 88. Brock, three good football questions. We'll start here. Well, who does UW play this week?
I play Arizona Friday night.
How's Arizona?
Arizona's not won a game in, what, 2 years?
So bad.
I asked because I knew. What happens if they lose? Is it possible they could lose?
I don't think it's possible.
It's impossible.
I think Arizona's the worst Power 5 team in America.
Who's coaching that team now?
Your boy Jed Fish.
Oh, no. That can't be true.
Yeah. That's what's going down.
Do you even know who Jed Fish is?
Yeah, the old offensive quarterback's coach here in Seattle.
Yeah.
Then he went to Florida. I remember Jed Fish.
Yeah, you are a real Jed Fish guy.
Oh, yeah. I've always been a big Jed Fish guy.
He's a fish on you, right?
I'm all about him. It's because he always reminds me of the old DJ in L.A. on K-Rock, Jed the Fish. Maybe that's Judd the Fish, but one or the Jed other. The I think it's Jed the Fish. So he always kind of reminds
it
me.
It is down in the desert. It is on a Friday night. If it was up here in Washington on a rainy Saturday, yes, Arizona would have no chance. But a couple years ago when Washington was really good, I think they went to the Fiesta Bowl. They went down and had to beat them in overtime, and they were a bad Arizona team then, and they're a bad Arizona team now that's not won a game.
You got that, remember they had that crazy break against Arizona where the ball bounced off?
Yes.
Was it Mason Foster's leg or something? Oh, yeah.
Mr. Memory today. Look at
I've been drinking my green smoothies. He
loves him some late 2000s. Loves it. The Keith Price era. It was
They cannot lose. They cannot lose Friday night. I mean, they lose Friday night, then the rumblings of change and the disgruntled Tyees and the alumni and the boosters are going to be in full throat. You cannot lose to a winless Arizona team that did not win last year. They have not won this year. They're, I think, one of three FBS teams that have not won a game this season. You cannot lose this game Friday.
What's going on with the whole quarterback situation? I saw Jimmy Lake say that they're not even close to considering a change. And maybe it's because he doesn't want to burn the red shirt with Sam or whatever, but there's got to be an opportunity for Sam near the end of this year to get some time to set up next year, right?
I think it is all dependent upon, and some of that is tied, John Donovan, the coordinator, is tied to the quarterback. And you know, a change there, I think, is a slight on the coordinator, who believes very much so in Dylan, and they're going to go down that road. There is a commonality and a little bit of a parallel to our opening conversation today about Pete. And, you know, I chatted with Tim Brando, who was on the call of the Husky game Saturday with Spencer.
He did a good job.
Yeah, and I mean, Tim loves ball. And actually, he called me. And he just kind of called to check in. How are things? Saw your nephew, and how's he liking it? And just all of it. And I kind of used it as a chance to quiz him. And I was like, well, you tell me. How did those meetings go? What did you feel? What did you sense? He's like, well, you know, I could definitely sense in the build-up to the game the frustration with the offense and what they're doing. And Spencer is you know, pretty good and asks pretty hard questions in our meeting. And really, you know, point-blank kind of asked Jimmy, you know, where are you at offensively? What do you want to be? You know, are you going to open this thing up? And you know, Jimmy's like, I'm a defensive coach, man. You know, we run the ball. And, you know, I'm going to protect my defense and play to my defense. And that has been the mentality. And when he says, as he did this week, Jimmy Lake, like, hey, man, we're a couple plays away from being, you know, four wins in conference. Like, he genuinely believes it and has and frankly shares a lot of similarities to Pete Carroll in that way. Want to play defense, want to run the ball, want to shorten the game, want to make every game close. Every game is close, no matter who you're playing. So if they play to that style Friday night, they have a chance to keep a very bad Arizona team in the game, create a sense of belief, and who knows what can happen in the desert. That's been a bad place for Washington in a lot of games down there over the last couple decades.
Brock, do you expect me to let you go on and say that the reason why they're not switching quarterbacks is because it could be an affront to the offensive coordinator that they're going to fire at least by the end of the season, if not next week?
Howdy, I'm going to say that, dude, Jimmy, that was Jimmy's hire. It was a hire that was outside the box for everybody. Nobody saw that hire coming when he made that hire to John Donovan. And he is going to stand by that. And he is standing by that decision right now, even in the midst of some very big difficulties this season. So I don't think that Jimmy's going to just change quarterbacks unless John Donovan wants to change quarterbacks. John Donovan doesn't want to change quarterbacks right now.
All right.
And, oh, by the way, they don't want to change a system to play to the strengths of their team on either side of the ball. And I ranted about this a month ago. And if you want to get me all fired up, Howdy, once again, you can get me fired up, because the strength of their defense is two of the best corners in the conference. So play man-to-man and put nine guys around the line of scrimmage, but you won't do it. You won't do it because I don't want to give up big plays.
Well, so you can't let that kid from Michigan beat you. I mean,
no, like, can't let him beat you.
It's a lot of good quarterback play in the Pac-12, et cetera.
I mean, but then on offensively, you got two dudes, man. You've got two of the better receivers you've had in a long time, right? Probably since John Ross and Pettis. That is what I think of Roma Dunze and Jalen McMillan. Those are gifted, talented, future NFL caliber guys. They are that dynamic and talented. And you need to play to their strengths, and you have to push the ball, and you must take your shots, and you must have your explosive play action game and explosive plays off of, even if you do want to run the ball, and that's not been nearly good enough either.
All right, how do you really feel? Question number two, just on the football side, what's next at Wazoo?
This is a significant challenge. Kyle, you said earlier five coaches. Is that right? Four
assistants plus Rolo.
That's five.
O-line, D-line.
That's half your coaching staff.
Secondary and offensive coordinators.
You have 10 coaches, right? Paid coaches in college football. Now you have GAs and analysts and others. And Wazoo does not have as deep a Rolodex financially as, you know, SEC teams with, you know, countless number of analysts and assistants and GAs and all sorts of folks. I mean, that is what's next is that is tough duty. I mean, to try to even prepare and coach a team now calling, I'm going to guess, GAs. We'll find out this week exactly who is going to be in some of those spots. Can you bring people from the outside? You also run a system in a run and shoot that very, very, very few people in all of college football or the NFL run. So it is a trying situation, just schematically, just simply preparation.
So you're just talking about for the rest of the
season. I'm talking about functioning Saturday on a sideline and making adjustments of coaching your kids,
right,
of putting a plan together. Dickert, the defensive coordinator, has been elevated to head coach. So maybe defensively, you know, he is still there. The system is still there. That shouldn't be quite as brutal. But offensively, I mean, this is catastrophic.
I mean, I think you probably just use your third string quarterback to do that. Sometimes you throw him in at the goal line. Sometimes you just throw him in and let him call plays. Well, why not?
Catastrophic beyond this year.
You just call it a stretch assignment.
They already were struggling to recruit given everything hanging in the balance here. And now they've lost half of their staff that can go out and recruit.
Yes.
That's bad. That's bad.
Question number three. Brock, give me a team no one's talking about, but they should be.
Eastern Washington University is the best college team in the state. How about that?
That's pretty definitive.
How about that? Their little quarterback, I don't know if you've watched. You probably haven't watched Eastern. They didn't play Washington or Wazoo this year. I watched them on ESPN2, beat Montana at their place. Kid threw for seven
Eric
touchdowns.
Berrier, amazing.
Eric Berrier threw seven touchdowns, ran for another, had eight touchdowns, 600 yards last game. Watching him against a good Montana defense. That is legitimately that Montana defense they played, and he threw for, I don't know, 500 yards, 30-something points.
I think they average like 48 points and 650 yards a game.
If you ever get a chance to see them and watch them, and we'll see if they're on ESPN2 again or some other network, you have got to watch this dude play, Salk. He is the Russell Wilson of that level. He
really
should win the Walter Payton Award. He's even he feels smaller than Russell because he's slight of frame.
So like, sort of Kyler-like?
But he's not. But even Kyler's like thick, right? Strong. This dude is like little, but he can flat out fling it everywhere. And his deep ball is like Russell's. He throws a moon ball with unbelievable accuracy. He is much fun to watch. He's the most fun player in the state of Washington to watch on, I think, a team. If Eastern played Washington and Wazoo, right? If they had like the little series of those three, I think Eastern wins that cup. I think this year they are the best team because of him. He is that dynamic. He is that good a player. And if you ever get a chance to watch Eastern, and they'll probably, you know, be playing for a national championship this year if that kid stays healthy. That dude is incredible to watch.
Well, you know, UW.
Like Eastern Washington.
I feel like UW should schedule Western this year, and maybe make sure you get a win on that schedule. Then they'd be sure to be on top of something. All right. Thank you, Brock. Good blue 88.
That was
today.
As good a joke as Waldron Walk.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, that was a very poor effort by me in the opening segment.
Yeah.
That was not your best.
That wasn't the best effort. All right. No. Well, you know what? It's a good indication that this podcast is done for today. We will be back. We are recording Tuesday next week. I don't know if it'll be released Tuesday or Wednesday, so you'll just have to stay tuned and find out. But looking forward to it. Brock, have a good week. We'll talk next week. And
sounds
for
good,
everybody
man.
Else, the hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!